Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, March 16th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
Oh, shit. Nurse Tan, call maintenance. I have sperm all over my desk again.
Oh my God, what are you doing? Trying to make me sick? Stop doing that. What a way to start a show. Anyhow, we're back with my guest, the talented, young, erotic author, Emerald. This is part two of our chat in this podcast series called The Erotic Mind. As you know, we've been chatting with erotic artists of every stripe in the hopes of uncovering something of the creative process involved in this specialized art form. If you somehow missed part one of this insightful and charming discussion, look for last week's podcast, number 106, on Dr. Dick's podcast page at the top of drdicksexadvice.com. Or just use the search function. Type in podcast number 106. And don't forget to include the number sign. I'm happy to report that Emerald will also share with us another succulent morsel of her own erotica. Today, we welcome a brand new podcast sponsor, Hot Movies for Her. Say, gals, are you sick and tired of being left out of the porn market? I would think so. If there's anything that this series of podcasts is telling us, it's that women love porn too, but not just any old smut. That's why the good people at Hot Movies created the ultimate porn site for women. Hot Movies for Her. It's the answer to all your dirty prayers. These plucky women have picked through the largest online adult library to find the very best movies for you. You want straight, lesbian, bisexual, gay, or trainee porn? Hot Movies for Her has it all. Choose your porn preferences from one of the specialized theaters or browse their full collection in their main theater. Watch videos online discreetly with no strings attached. No monthly or recurring charges. Just pay for what you want. And here's a tip. You can even see all the hot, sexy movies I directed and produced by using the Hot Movies for Her search feature. Just type in Daddy-O. That's D-A-D-D-Y, two O's, three H's. Daddy-O. I know you're going to love them.
It was an accident, right? You tripped, slipped on the floor, and accidentally stuck your dick in my wife.
I did no such thing. Okay, on with the show. Emerald, thank you for joining us again this week. I would like to pick up where we left off last week. One of the reasons that I'm doing this series is to get a handle on what erotic art is, at least as it's understood by the artist, him or herself. That can be a little bit difficult because perceptions of both what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and culture. For example, the depiction of a phallus in some cultures is not erotic, but merely a common symbol of potency and fertility. The same is true about words. Would you not agree?
I certainly would. And it's interesting when talking about erotic art, I think that we've just combined two subjects that are so subjective. That was a little play on words that I didn't mean to at all. But art, I've certainly always, as long as I can remember, thought of art as very subjective, mm-hmm. and erotic is also subjective. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a double whammy there that right. Certainly there's going to be a lot of subjectivity there. And since you mentioned time, I find that very interesting because, I think there's evidence that way back when, like in ancient times, eroticism wasn't, there's been this, contemporarily it seems there's a kind of an attack on eroticism and, right. and sexuality is vilified to some degree culturally, but I think there is evidence that in ancient times that was not always the case. There wasn't always the idea of this split between the body and the, quote, higher aspects of life.
That is so true. There didn't used to be a disconnect between the sacred and the profane, the sublime and the prosaic, or the spiritual experience and the natural experience. I mean, all of those things, were really connected at one time. We've you know, our culture, you know, and Judaic Christianity, I think, has divorced the two.
I completely agree. In fact, that's just what I was going to say. That's one of the areas in which I am particularly interested, the sexuality and spirituality, because I see them as so, you know, inherently connected. How could they not be?
Yes.
And I do see that as a particular area where culturally that's gone south, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you know, it's true that it seems that they used to certainly be viewed that way. And, of course, I think they still are, regardless of how distorted our view of it is. And that is an area I'm really interested in my work.
And I am also very interested in that as well. Because in many cultures, both past and present, a vehicle to understanding the divine in our life has been sexuality.
Exactly.
And I think our divorce of the two very fundamental things in our life and in our culture and in our society does us a great disservice. And I think both spirituality, religion, and sexuality, eroticism, become very askewed because they are divorced from one another.
I could not agree with you more, and in fact, I have said this, but you know, something very similar many times. I really feel that way. As I was saying at the beginning, you know, the sex work that I've done and the erotica writing I've done isn't something because I think sex is acceptable. It's because I think it's beautiful, an inherent part of our lives,
right,
and certainly a pathway to higher spirituality.
Yeah,
And yet,
I suspect that you know the same is true in your life. But because I agree with you, and I'm like out there on the front lines, not only with the work that I do as Dr. Dick, and you know my work as a pornographer with Daddy-O Productions, I can be this object of great ridicule by the part of lots of other people, you know, who are nice people, generally speaking. They just have, you know, hair across their ass about sexuality and the place of sexuality in our culture. So it's...
Sure.
But being on the front lines, I suppose, you know, we should be expecting that kind of stuff.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and it is unfortunate. And ridicule sometimes is some of a nicer word for it. But, but I hear what you're saying as an activist myself.
Yes. Is writing for a female audience different from writing for a male audience?
I don't think so. And the reason I don't think so is because it seems to me that that perspective necessitates some kind of generalization of what the female audience likes and what the male audience likes. And I, you know, some people might see it that way. I myself have not. I have not generally appreciated that kind of gender generalization. I don't really think it applies.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what all women like, and I don't know what all men like. And certainly I've met women that like something different from what I like. So that seems to me to somewhat invalidate the idea that there's something that generally the genders like separate from, you know, each gender likes separate from the other gender. So no, I myself have never thought of it as different because given that, frankly, even if I wanted to write for them differently, I wouldn't know how to. I wouldn't know what that meant, you know.
Do you write in other voices? I mean, are you able to write as a man, as a gay man, as a lesbian?
Sure. I've not tried it very much. I've not tried to write from the lesbian point of view before. I have attempted to write from the male point of view and found it interesting, quite frankly. I just sort of, you know, with a little bit of obviously mechanical biological difference, I just pretty much wrote, you know, as, this is what he might be thinking, that kind of thing. However, I've not submitted anything that I've done that way, so that's still experimental for me.
That's interesting. The distinction is often made between erotic art and erotica on the one hand and pornography on the other. All depict and describe the body, sensuality, sexuality, even lovemaking, but there is a fundamental difference between the two forms of expression, at least in the popular culture's mind. Is there a difference for you? And if there is, where does the difference lie?
Yeah, and this is, of course, not an unusual question, I don't think. And I think it's interesting. For me, I really don't draw a distinction there, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I think is interesting about that question, though, that sometimes might not be addressed is one reason that I think the question is so common is because the word pornography for many people has a negative connotation.
Yes.
Now, for me, it doesn't. I simply don't. I don't associate it that way. I've worked in pornography. I think that pornography as a genre is a beautiful thing. I mean, you know, it's.
It certainly can be.
Yeah, and I think that certainly that you just pointed implied something important, that pornography has been sometimes very poorly made and poorly marketed and
exploitative. And
yeah,
all the other things that it, you know, is rightfully accused of.
Sure. And the thing is, I don't think that's pornography's fault, necessarily. I don't think it's because the idea of, oh, if it's sexually explicit, it's all of those things.
Right.
I quite frankly think that, you know, if we were a little more open about sex as a culture and didn't shove this into the underground dark areas of public consumption, that we would see much higher quality in the realm of pornography. Right. And frankly, that's one of the things that I think a number of my colleagues in the erotica writing community are aiming to do. Sometimes, admittedly, it's still not described as pornography because pornography is thought of as something different. But for me, it really doesn't, the word itself doesn't have that negative connotation because I don't think it's the fault of the genre necessarily, like because it's sexually explicit, it is these things. Yeah. I think that, you know, pornography can be very beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I think that originally when we talked about erotic writing, we used to call it pornographic writing.
Sure.
You know, for good or for worse. And I guess in order to have it to go mainstream as much as it has, there's been a concerted effort on the part of the people who market as well as create it, you know, to change the vocabulary from, and actually distance themselves from visual pornography, which I think, as you suggest, may do us a disservice, because if everything fell under the same rubric, you know, of sexually explicit, regardless of it being words or depictions or moving images, the good stuff would rise to the top like cream, and the rest of the stuff would be something else.
Right, and I certainly can understand you know, why that's been done. For me, it's somewhat idealistic, I guess. It's that I think pornography could be so much more than it is, and I don't think pornography necessarily is a bad thing. I mean, the definition of it is something that's sexually explicit and intended to arouse. Great, that's what I write. You know,
and it should be that simple. I mean, you know,
yeah. I'm kind of breaking it down to the simple, but in that case. But sure.
Has reading and writing erotica empowered you as a woman? Or perhaps enriched your own sex or sensual life?
Sure. I think writing in general has, you know, as I mentioned, I've been doing it since I was about 7 or 8, and 7, I think. And I think that there's probably a reason that I've been drawn to it for so long, and I think that it's, I've felt it's been enriching to almost any area that I'm writing about. So in writing erotica, it would follow that, sure, it has been enriching in that way. And as far as submitting it and letting it go out to the public, I've appreciated that because it's kind of an opportunity to, I guess, again, like any kind of writing, it's just that erotica is what I've had published. It's saying, this is my perspective. You know, it's offering something. Mm-hmm. This is something that follows the perspective in me that has come out that I'm now offering to you. And when it's about sexuality, then sure, I've really appreciated the opportunity to offer that kind of thing in the realm of sexuality, since it's an area in which, obviously, I'm so interested.
Mm-hmm. Do you suppose that others could benefit from reading erotica?
Well, I certainly hope so. That's that is one of the reasons that I like to offer it. But yes, I do. I mean, I think, you know, if you were to ask someone, do you think people can benefit from reading? generally, oftentimes the answer would be yes, sure. Yes. And so erotica, same thing. You know, if we feel that, you know, the open exchange and sincere exchange of ideas and experiences can enhance our experience in general or our perspectives, our understandings, then it would certainly seem to me that that would apply to sex and sexuality in the writing of erotica as well.
Well, I think you're really onto something there that I've been trying to pick away at all the people that I've been interviewing, because I think you're so right. And continuing that metaphor of, you know, reading in general, I suspect that, you know, a reader of anything is bound to increase his or her vocabulary. His or her mind will be expanded. And then I would suspect that, you know, an interest will grow in whatever that person is reading about. So all of those things, if we apply that, you know, to human sexuality, would be a terrific thing. I would have fewer people in my private practice, probably.
Right. I mean, you know, exactly. Why do we read in general? Why do we read about anything? It's an opportunity to enhance our perspective, mm-hmm. or our experience, I think.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that's one of the reasons why in my practice I invite people, you know, couples, for example, who are having problems communicating about sexuality, to read erotica. Not just read it, you know, in the privacy of, you know, their boudoir or the bathroom or wherever they do it, but to each other and aloud, because it's so powerful and empowering, I think, to, you know, say the words out loud, fuck and pussy and cunt and clit and cock and suck and fuck and all of those really hard words that a lot of people find so difficult to say, but are so important when we are communicating with one another about our sexual needs.
I agree. I'll try to work some of those into my next reading here. But I do agree, and I think that it's a good point, because if you're having trouble, you know, if it's hard to say the words, you know, does that mean it's hard for you to think about them? It's hard to, you know, what else is there?
Yes.
It's almost like saying the words, reading about it in that way could be the first layer of something in
exactly.
some cases.
Exactly. And it also, you know, helps people get in the mood. I mean, it's a nice break from, you know, the day-to-day, you know, coming home from work, you know, dealing with the kids, or, you know, hard day at work and, you know, cleaning up the dishes after dinner and whatever it is that, you know, doing the laundry and all that kind of stuff, you know, getting into an erotic space, you know, to be sexual with your partner or partners or whatever, even by yourself, it seems to me.
Right.
One needs to shift gears. And one of the ways, an effective way of shifting gears is erotica.
Right. And another thing it can do is it can really, I think, sometimes teach people about themselves. If they think they are the only person who's ever thought of something, or they're like, oh my goodness, why am I thinking about this? This is weird. And then they read something and they say, oh, mm-hmm. wow, other people think about this too, you know, or they read something and it turns them on and it's something they never thought of. And they realize, oh, I'm interested in this. And so I think it can be expansive in that way as well.
Would this be a good time to invite you to share another piece of your work with us?
Well, sure.
Please, please, please.
Oh, how lovely. I would be happy to do that. I can read from a story called What We Do, and this will be forthcoming in an ebook from Logical Lust. It's called Swing, edited by Jolie Dupree. I think, actually, you're familiar with
oh,
it.
Oh, yes. I love her. She's so great.
And it'll be coming out, I think, in April of this year. Okay. So this character has accompanied her husband on a business trip for his company. And they're in their hotel room. And in this scene, he is on lunch break and back up in their room after the first day of the conference. I met one of your conference participants today, I said. Oh? Mm-hmm. In the elevator. He was very cute. Young, a little tousled, looked like a college frat boy playing dress-up. Jackson snorted, aware of the effect such a look had on me. Aha, find something to keep you occupied while I'm so busy this week, did you? I smiled. I was glad he recognized so easily the interest at which I was hinting, though I knew his casual tone belied a true curiosity as to whether this was the case. And I understood that. I liked to know when he was planning to play, too. In general, we let each other know in advance. It occurred to me, how do you feel about that? Jackson smiled somewhat ruefully. Well, I like it better when neither of us has to resort to it simply because the other isn't available, but I can certainly understand the temptation. I just wish it weren't because I wasn't here to take care of you myself. But you know it isn't, of course, I pointed out. If you want me to be available just for you this week, I completely understand. It's no problem. It was true. It had occurred to me that he might want my undivided attention this week amidst his busy schedule. Jackson smiled. Thank you, dear. But no, it's fine. He handed me the room service menu and gave me a characteristic wink. Though if you wouldn't mind maybe confining it to the day so you can be here when I get back in the evenings. As I'd suspected. Of course, darling, and I didn't even get his name. I might not even see him again. I went to the bed and kissed him, climbing on top of him in my still damp bikini. Jackson eased back, running his fingers along my bare skin. His hands moved up and untied the strings of my bikini top. Then he flipped us over, pushing himself on top of me and kissed me deeply. Lifting himself slightly to remove my bikini bottoms, he undid his pants as well and slipped inside of me. I moaned, the smooth silkiness of his tie brushing against the skin between my breasts. He pushed into me deeply, slowly, my body rising effortlessly to meet his every thrust. Then his mouth moved to my ear, one hand snaking around to the back of my neck and grasping my hair. I knew what was coming next, and a hot jolt of lust shot through me as he began to whisper in my ear. You can fuck whoever you want when you're here alone during the day, as long as you're ready to bend over and take my cock at night when I get back. You want to spread your legs for all those hot young colleagues of mine, don't you? I know you do. You like to spread the wealth of that hot pussy of yours like the little slut that you are. I was panting, closer and closer to coming, as Jackson pulled my hair even more tightly. His whispering voice continued. You probably want to come down and take over the seminar I'm leading this afternoon, don't you? You want to walk right up to the front, strip that hot body naked, and watch all those horny businessmen in their suits line up to fuck you while I supervise. I bet that's exactly what you want, isn't it, Victoria? His words sent me over the edge, flying blindly into orgasm as my body thrashed beneath him. He kept pumping, faster now, my wetness all around us as he came into me, my hands still gripping his shoulders through the smooth white fabric of his shirt. He kissed me slowly before rolling off of me and rising from the bed. He glanced at the clock as he tucked his shirt back in and refastened his pants. Then he sat on the edge of the bed and touched my cheek, still filled with heat from our encounter.
How you do go on, ma'am.
Oh, Dr. Dick, you flatter me. We already talked about that, I guess.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
You.
I mean, the afternoon quickies are just the thing for these cool, almost spring days.
Yeah, indeed.
So listen, as an author, I know that you probably write a bunch of other stuff besides erotica. What makes your erotica different from your other work? I mean, besides the obvious.
Sure. Actually, I really like that question, and it's another question that I really like and don't know exactly how to answer.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's because, you know, for a while, I have, obviously, when I started writing when I was 7, I was not writing erotica. So, indeed, I have written many other things. And for a while, when I first started writing erotica, I continued to think, I write mostly non-erotica, but every once in a while I dabble in this erotica genre. But, you know, at this point, it's what I've had published, and it's what I'm mostly writing now. And and I've really loved it. And
It shows.
It's, thank you. I think it's interesting because I guess I would say there's a quote-unquote direction in both kinds. If it seems like if I am writing non-erotica, especially at this point since I have written erotica so much, that I need to keep in mind not to write about sex. and sometimes it's almost... Yeah, well, sometimes it's almost felt like I want to go do that, and then I think, but this isn't erotica. So almost there's like a holding back there. Not necessarily, not with everything, but sometimes. And with erotica... it's more of a I need to keep in mind I need to write about sex.
Right.
And if I don't, then it's not going to be erotica. But with that, you know, that doesn't seem nearly so limiting, obviously, as I just listen to myself talk about it right now. You know, it seems, okay, if I don't write about sex, then I guess it's not erotica, no big deal. And if I do, then it is. So it seems, you know, I know that Donna George Story, whom you've mentioned, has said that she wrote non-sex stuff for a while, and then when she started, you know, really writing erotica, she felt like she had really found her niche. And
uh-huh.
I don't know if I would say that, but I would say that I appreciate the freedom of writing it, that I don't need to censor, I don't need
right.
to, you know, worry about, oh, if this comes out and it's very explicit. And it's another interesting thing is I have a story that I just finished and submitted. It'll be it's upcoming, going to be published online, and it's a story I wrote I think 4 years ago or something, and it was non-erotic. it was not erotic at all, and I pulled it back out, and I was working with it, and I thought, what if I made this an erotica story? And I thought, oh, that's kind of weird to, you know, the story's already done, to try
right,
to revamp
right.
it that way. But I thought I would try it, and I think this sounds cheesy, and I don't really mean it to, but it's like it came alive when I did that.
Uh-huh.
This story had been done for years. You know, I just uh-huh. finished it, or I mean, I just considered it a finished piece of work. But I did merge it, so to speak, into erotica, and it changed the whole tone and really did something with it that wasn't there before, obviously. But I found that very interesting. It's the first time I had done that, and I really I enjoyed the process and really liked the way it turned out.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was waiting for that breath of life.
Yeah, right. It kind of seemed that way, interestingly enough.
Do you ever find yourself, after reading over something that you've written, saying to yourself, geez, I really got to smut this up a little bit more? Or the averse, say, oh, my God, I got to tone this down some.
The second one I've not done, as we touched on. Well, as we touched on at the you know, last week when we talked, I've generally experienced as far as where I have submitted the erotica publishing community, if you will,
mm-hmm.
I've not experienced it as constraining. You know, whatever
right,
I've
right, right.
felt I wanted to write about it, it seemed to not be too much, so to speak. So that's nice. I've appreciated that. And in the first instance, I would say I think that's maybe happened a time or two. And in general, I either thought I took a close look and thought, okay, either I think this probably isn't an erotica story, or I need to approach it from a whole different angle. And it's really happened very rarely,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. It just has seemed to kind of flow for the most part. But again, I've been writing mostly erotica, so I've not felt a need to hold back. It just,
cool.
sex just seems to come up. What can I say?
You got it bad, and that ain't good. So listen, today erotic artists abound, and there's an abundance of amazingly good written erotica out there, as well as, you know, visual erotic art. although in some circles this genre still is not accepted as mainstream, has this been your experience as well?
Sure, although I think you know, it's interesting that you mention this, because I've seen a couple of my colleagues recently speaking of how they've experienced the sort of division in their life between
yes.
their erotica writing and the rest of their lives. Now, I have not had that nearly as much, as I mentioned, because people in my life know I do this. And so I think I probably experienced that a lot less than some of my colleagues and some of the other people in this industry. So actually, one of the ways I have experienced it is a little bit lighter in tone, and it has a lot to do with language, I think. I forget sometimes, sincerely, that people don't walk around talking about sex all the time, and that if I say
Unless
something
offhand, you and I.
Right, right. And that if I say something offhandedly that has one of those words you were mentioning
uh-huh.
earlier, and I don't think anything of it, and people are like, and I think, oh, that's right, I forgot, I'm sorry, this isn't very everyday commonality
yeah.
topic of conversation for you. So, you know, for example, if someone, and the double entendre thing, you know, if someone says, if my sister says, oh, I'm going to get a facial, and I think, oh, wow, that's a really big thing to be talking about, and then I realize she's going to a spa, you know, she's not, but I've worked in porn, facial means something totally different to
uh-huh.
me, so it's kind of a...
And maybe your sister could benefit
yeah,
from the latter as
right.
opposed to the former.
Right. I thought, oh, wow, how open
how liberating.
To talk about that.
You go, realized, girl.
False alarm. Yeah. So that's how I have mostly experienced that. But surely I do realize that in a lot of circles it would not be. I mean, I think some of it has been how I've approached it, quite frankly.
Right.
I think if I said, okay, well, I'm kind of embarrassed and ashamed to admit this, but I write erotica, then it might be received differently
exactly.
from the way I have said it, which is,
exactly.
oh, I write erotica. And,
uh-huh.
you know, and then it's kind of like it almost, and I don't mean to do this, but it almost puts the onus on the other person to feel embarrassed about it.
Exactly.
Then. I mean, I'm not trying to make you embarrassed, but I'm not embarrassed either. So
yeah.
if you want to be, then certainly that's your prerogative to respond that way. But
then
it's
own
not,
your shit.
Right. But, you know, it's not coming from me. You know what I mean?
Right. I think that's a wonderful thing. I mean, carrying your hat in your hand and shuffling your feet and saying, you know, well, gee, you know, I have this little tiny secret kind of thing. You're setting your audience up for, you know, for them to judge you. I mean, they're going to judge
right.
you anyhow. And so you might as well, I mean, if you're proud of what you do, as you and I seem to be proud of what we do, you know, why not put it out there like that?
Indeed.
Are there topics that you gravitate toward and topics that you avoid?
Sure. I would say, I mean, in large part, not entirely, but in large part, I gravitate toward things I'm interested in. Things that
you
I
clever
like sexually, you know, yeah. So that I think has frequently happened. Again, what as I said earlier, if the sex just comes up, sometimes it's something that I myself find interesting. So
right.
Funny that it would cross my mind, huh? But as far as things I avoid, this is very technical, but. And I guess maybe it's not avoid so much as actually put in there, but something I've done consistently in erotica writing is I put condom usage into my stories.
Good for you.
Almost invariably. And the reason I do that is because, well, there are a couple reasons. One, because I'm an advocate. I'm an advocate for safe sex. I mean, I've been a reproductive rights activist and that kind of thing. I'm very big on being open about that kind of thing too, condom usage. And correlatively, you know, some people. I think sometimes there's been a perception that it's not quote unquote sexy or interrupts
yes.
the moment
oh,
or something.
Yes.
And frankly, in my own personal experience, that's not been the case. So I like to put that into my writing just because it's. You know, it's not just an activist thing. It's also just an acknowledgement that actually this is not, it has not been the case that this has interrupted my sex life, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on the contrary, sometimes I've actually really appreciated that aspect.
Yeah.
So I like to, I've put that in almost all of my writing very deliberately, unless the couple
we
is,
are,
you know, married or something like that.
We are such kindred spirits in that regard, because I do the same thing in my Daddy-O productions. I mean,
yeah.
I go out of my way to show people putting condoms on, not just because I think it's the responsible thing to do as an advocate for, you know, safe sex or responsible sex, but
mm-hmm.
because I think it can be very erotic.
Exactly.
It isn't necessarily, as some people suggest, you know, an interruption. I mean, if you know how to do this cleverly with a sense of sexuality and sensuality, putting on a condom either on yourself or on your partner is can be way hot.
Indeed, I agree entirely. I also it was something I insisted upon when I was working in porn as well.
Yeah.
Again, somewhat for the activist aspect
yeah.
as well as for. Obviously, personal
yeah.
safety.
Is it possible for you to eroticize something you personally don't find sexy?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. I'm going to say yes, although if you'd asked me maybe a year ago, I might have said no because it hadn't happened yet. But
yes.
the reason I say yes is because if my character finds it sexy, then that's all that's really necessary.
Oh,
you know, I do write fiction, and so my characters are not me.
Uh-huh.
And so if the character is just, you know, I actually had a character surprise me not long ago in that she was doing something, and I wrote it, and I thought, wow, I don't feel like I'm interested in this at all. And, you know, somebody could try
uh-huh.
to analyze about whether unconsciously I am or whatever, and that's
uh-huh.
fine. But I don't feel like I am. And but she found it sexy, and she was
uh-huh.
my character, and I was writing her. So I would say yes, if my character finds it sexy, then that's you know, characters in charge, quite frankly. That might sound very funny to a non-writer, but it might be just kind of a writerly thing. But if the character is doing something, again, if it's just flowing, I'm not in charge, really.
Right. What do you look for in the works of other erotic artists?
I don't know if I know the answer to that question until I see it, because there might be things, you know, sometimes I've encountered things I thought I wouldn't be interested in, but if I read them or looked at them, I was, and vice versa. I'm not sure how to explain this, but the the energy with which something is done matters a lot, I think. So even if it's something that I might not personally find very erotic, if you know what I was talking about earlier, if something's just flowing through me, if that's just coming, if that was happening with them, if they're just conveying something that is sort of intangible above and beyond the technical aspects of what they're offering, then I think it's moving. And so I don't know, I mean, certainly there are subjects, technically speaking, that I'm interested in erotically, yes, that I might seek out. But I also, I don't only look at that sometimes,
right,
because,
right.
You know, sometimes things do it for me that I didn't really expect to.
Who are your inspirations?
You know, I would say a lot of my colleagues in the erotica writing world are my inspirations, and not just for the beautiful work that I've seen them do, but because they seem to have the same kind of aim as I do, and as you have mentioned, you know, they really care about sexuality. They think this is important. They think that this is an interesting subject, and they really sincerely want to offer something creatively about it, and that inspires me. And
mm-hmm.
I've met online a lot of writers like the ones that we've talked about, Donna George Story and Jeremy Edwards, certainly,
mm-hmm.
and excuse me, and just different people that I've met in you know, electronically on blogs and that kind of thing. I find it very inspiring, and certainly if I enjoy their work, then all the more so.
Right. Any sexual heroes?
Yes, because it's such an important area for me that I think I would say I have a general general idea of sexual heroes are people that, as I was just touching on, really believe that this is important. It's
mm-hmm.
not some frivolous aside in life, oh, sex, you know, whatever. It's really an inherent, important, beautiful thing that, as we also have touched on, can be an incredible pathway to the divine and to consciousness. And people that really seem to understand and care about that, like yourself, for example, and I'm really not just saying that, so people like you are my sexual heroes, people like Annie Sprinkle and Carol Quincer, Nina Hartley, and Veronica Monette, you know, a lot of those people that have worked in porn or have been whores. And by the way, I love that word. As an activist, I embrace that word as many of my fellow.
It's certainly
activists.
Not a pejorative use, that's for sure.
Right. I mean, I think it's a beautiful word. So, you know, that kind of thing, I think that's so beautiful. And those people really are heroes to me, because they're really, I think, offering a service in an area where, in particular, collectively, it has been just distorted and vilified sexuality, I mean, of course. And so I really see a value in that service.
And a lot of those people were pioneers, were doing this
exactly.
stuff before there were lots of other colleagues doing it along with them. Yes, I agree. Those we share some of the same heroes. What does the future hold for your work?
Well, that's a fair question, in part because I don't know the answer. But no, I love to write. I'm just doing it as much as I'm moved to, and aiming to submit as much as I find appropriate. And I hope that editors and readership continue to, you know, appreciate and enjoy it. I'm still working on short stories. I've wanted to write a novel since I was 7, but incredibly, in however many years, that has not happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
But short stories are still my focus now. And as long as I can still keep finding an audience for them, then I hope to continue to do so.
Good, good, good. Can you give us your web address and walk us around a little bit?
Certainly. My website is called The Greenlight District, again, and it is at www.thegreenlightdistrict.com. www.thebookbeat.org. Right now I am only using basically the blog feature. It's
right.
only one page. I could build more pages onto it if at some point it comes to that. That's one reason
well,
I chose to.
Well, you better get busy.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
And it has, you know, so there are different categories on the left, down the left-hand side, and everything, everywhere that I have been published is listed in the right sidebar below my bio.
Okay.
And with links to where all of it can be purchased.
Excellent. That was my question next. So we can find your work by linking, by following the links from your site.
That is correct. And some of it is free. You know, some of very lovely websites like Oysters and Chocolate and The Erotic Woman. And Good
Absolutely.
Vibrations Magazine, you know, there are links there that'll just take you right to my stories.
Right. Cool beans.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, my dear, for being so generous with your precious time. We are all the richer for the experience.
Oh, Dr. Dick, it has been my pleasure. Thank you so much for interviewing me. I've really, really enjoyed it, and I appreciate the opportunity.
And if our audience only knew, the difficulties that we had pulling this together, but we overcame, so to speak, and I am so grateful that you continue to be patient with me as we made the necessary adjustments. Thank you again.
Well, likewise, technical difficulties are no match for sexual activists like us, I guess.
Okie dokie, we will be seeing each other in cyberspace.
Oh, wonderful. I look forward to it.
Bye now.
Bye.
What a fantastic show, huh? Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Hot Movies for Her. All you porn-loving gals out there, listen up. The days of wading through a lot of really crummy male-oriented smut just to find the good stuff, the stuff that you're craving to see, are finally over. Now there's Hot Movies for Her, your very own place for the very best porn there is. Check it out. See the difference female-oriented porn makes. And don't forget that Hot Movies for Her is where all the cool porn chicks in the know hang out. Remember, there's never a membership fee or any recurring charges. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. And here's a tip. You get 10 free minutes just for signing up. Why, you can't beat that with a stick. Look for their swell I Heart Girl Porn banner in the sidebar of my site. Oh, and there's one more bit of news, sex fans. I want to tell you about another series of podcast interviews I'm doing called Sex Edge-ucation. We will be investigating the fetish and kink world and discussing topics like BDSM, power play, swinging with prominent practitioners and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles. This new series, which premiered Wednesday, February 11th, will continue on Wednesday, while my regular podcasts, like this one, will remain on Mondays. Be sure to look for all my podcasts on iTunes. Once in the podcast section, all you have to do is search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice, and don't forget to subscribe. When you do, feel free to leave a comment. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex, that's even better. Over and out.